You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 449.
Well, it's January the 1st, 2018, and I'm sitting here with my compatriot from the podcasting world on the Outdoor Station, Andy Howell, in a garden shed while the rain is tumbling down outside. And we're just reflecting on, as everybody does this time of year, on 2017 and what changes and benefits and things that might be happening in the outdoors world in 2018. Of course, we had a pleasant evening, like I'm sure many people have had. And reflecting over breakfast, the first question that everybody normally asks each other, and we've been no different, is what are you considering for resolutions or to change and alter this year? So I'm going to start by asking Andy for his thoughts and what he thinks he might be changing or trying to change, because we all do things with the best of interest, for 2018.
I should say that most people wake up in the morning on New Year's and, you know, wish each other the New Year and start chatting about things. We immediately go into the pros and cons between trail shoes and boots. You know, that's the kind of people we are. No, for me, 2017 was a bit of a frustrating year, really. We had we had a family death at the end of March. We pulled out of the TGO challenge because we simply had too much to do and it was getting too much of a hassle. So it's quite interesting how when you don't have a significant event like that to plan for, it makes a big difference in the year. So, you know, I've been out and I've done quite a lot of day walking, a few overnights and stuff like that, but nothing big or significant. And I feel I've missed that quite a lot. So this year hopefully will be different. We're back in the TGO challenge again. You know, I want to get my fitness up, I want to lose a bit more weight, I want to get those muscles going a bit more, you know, maybe get my bike out and do a few longer rides. But essentially last year, you know, I missed the multi-day experience. That was quite a big significant thing. You know, you can go out onto your hills, your favourite hills, you know, where you don't even need a map and stuff like that, and it's still great. But it's not the same as the multi-day experience. So I'm hoping we're going to get back to that this year.
Certainly, as I was saying, I find my excuses in 2017 increasing for not getting out and being consistent with exercise. And I totally agree with you. And as we were saying, Rose is very, very good at discipline. And I seem to be, I'll just do it when I finish this. I'll just do it when I finish that. And in many respects, although this is going out through social media, and social media is a big part of communication in whatever format these days, I do find the amount of time that it takes to keep on top of it or organise it or whatever does seem to impact, or I allow it to impact probably too much in sort of practical things.
Yes, and I think also to add to that, I think increasingly we have to think about cost. I mean, I know we're going to talk about bit about that later, but you know, just the cost of rail transfer, maintaining cars, getting out there is made a big difference. Last year I hit 60. I mean, I know I don't sound like
good
that
grief,
on the radio.
Really?
I know, but I was able to get myself my senior citizens rail card, you know, and I go on the train and I give them and they say, you don't look old enough to use a rail. But that's made quite a significant difference. But I think the costs of getting out there, you know, and I think there's going to be a big demand this year because of changes we can see happening in the industry and the changes we know that are coming. I think cost consciousness, while it's been with us for a while now, is going to leap ahead this year. You know, it's I think the costs of doing things are beginning to be a much more significant pressure on a lot of people.
I couldn't agree more. I certainly, from a personal position of being interested in the outdoors, but also from the commercial side of running the shop, Backpacking Light, it has become very obvious and much more interesting, the questions relating to cost. It always comes back to cost, and I think the impact that it's having on the different generations is quite interesting. You've got the older generation who are sort of retired and possibly been lucky enough on a final salary pension, to be able, I think they're the rich ones, to be honest, because they seem to have the fitness and interest to still pursue their hobbies, and they've got the budget. The people that are just sort of coming into the outdoors or trying to make the most of the outdoors are the ones actually having to make quite a sacrifice to afford to do things safely or correctly, and purchasing the right sort of a gear to support that.
Yeah, just over the Christmas holiday break, there was a report issued by the Resolution Foundation, a think tank, and they were saying that the millennial generation will inherit property from their parents, but they won't be inheriting it till they're in their 60s. So in other words, I mean, they were looking at that in relation to, well, you know, that's not going to help anybody get on the property ladder. But if you think about it, it's going to keep that pressure financially upon people all through their working lives. So I think we are going to see quite a big change. And that's mirrored, well, not mirrored, but it's compounded by the fall in sterling. Is having a big impact on trade. We don't know where we're going in the long term with that, so there's a kind of concern over there. And a couple of months ago, I was told that one of the big high street chains is now writing to their suppliers and saying, look, we're going to automatically deduct 25% from your invoice, you know, if you want to keep trading with us. So I wrote about that on my blog, and a couple of people I know who are outdoor industry experts came back to me and said, yep, that's right, that's happening. So the pressure all the time is being put on people to keep things going. And maybe at the top luxury end of the market, you know, the very bespoke stuff using very expensive Cuban fibre and stuff like that, that market will presumably stay reasonably buoyant because of the, you know, the specialism or the obsessiveness of those people who've got the disposable income to buy it. But I think the mass market is going to get squeezed. I think we're going to see a lot of brands disappearing or changing into, you know, remainder type brands. And if you go into one of the big high street stores, certainly the one near me now, there's, you know, which has been open about 10 years, I guess, the range of stock is much, much less now. You want to go and buy a tent, they can maybe show you a demonstration model, but they then order it on the internet like everybody else does. And then the range of clothing is cut down and cut down and cut down. So I think the economics of things for the industry are going to get tighter. And, you know, maybe we've got to be just a bit cuter at looking at the bargain, the value for money stuff. Because as we were saying yesterday when we were traipsing around in the rain in Malvern, you know, a rain jacket is a rain jacket, and maybe we've all got a bit too obsessed with, you know, oh yes, but is it this more breathable than that one? Well, you know, you just unzip it a bit, don't you? But I mean, I think that change in the industry, I think we're going to see those trends continue to be harder this year.
I was in there's a new Mountain Warehouse shop opened up in Malvern on the shopping centre there, so it's a rather big store. And I was looking at the people in there as well as the equipment that's in there, and it's you know, it's great value for money stuff. And the industry we're talking about, the split that's coming that you've just described, really, that the ones that are more at the budget friendly range of equipment is perfectly adequate for most people to do most things. And then you've got the other end of the scale, which is the elite custom made area. It's the people that's servicing the mid range. The if you like, the typical sort of Cotswolds and the Ellis Brighams and whatever else that have always been the source of not only equipment but also information and knowledge and experiences. And I'm finding now that many of the Facebook groups that I'm sort of part of, and I sit and sort of hover and read on a fairly daily basis, you know, where are people that are coming into it? We, you know, yes, we're at that sort of age where we've had a fair amount of experience, but the people that are coming into it are genuinely wanting to know stuff. Well, when we were in our 20s and 30s, we would peruse the magazines and glean and squeeze every bit of information out of them as possible. Or there might be a social group, but it was not as social, perhaps, as it potentially is today. But now the questions that people are asking in the Facebook forums tend to be those basic questions again. And, you know, of course, the information they're getting is a range of information from a range of different experiences, which possibly it can be a bit misleading.
I think that's a very interesting observation. I've decided, because last year not only did my walking suffer, but my blog suffered, because I don't see the point in just writing stuff for the sake of it. So this year I'm going to build it back up again. But I've already made some decisions that some things I'm not going to do. I'm not going to be talking about gear that much, because, you know, there's only so many times you can write about something. And even at the top end of the market, you know, we've got to the point where the materials are robust enough, light enough. So the difference is in just in design now, and it's in little tweaks or this, that, and the other. And actually, the weight of stuff is not getting any lighter. So I've decided not to do that. I just feel it's getting so tedious. And the other thing that I don't really want to do is to just go out on day walks or something like that and just write about them, unless there's something interesting. So what I've decided to do in my own mind is, you know, I want to write about the experience of being on the hills much more. And if people connect with that, and I know they like it because I've been doing it for long enough, you know, then that's what I want to do. And in that sense, it goes back to what you were saying about some of those basic skills. So a couple of months ago, I was looking at some stuff for the TGO Challenge next year. And I got some software on my computer, which is video software, but is used for presentations and demos. And I suddenly thought, actually, maybe I could do something about it. So I did a series of three or four videos, about 25 minutes each, about understanding different issues of the challenge. One of them was just explaining how Scotland works. You know, if you go from coast to coast, this is how you do it. This is how you plan it. And it's fascinating watching it, because a number of people have come back to me and said, look, we've been watching this event for years. You know, I haven't been able to do it yet. I'd like to do it next year, or I might be doing it the next few years. But those that have been the most popular are those that explain the basic concepts of, well, actually, in the northwest of Scotland, the hills look like this, and then you get to the Great Glen in the middle, and then it changes again. And you know, this is how you plan a route. And I mean, those are the things that are invaluable. Now, it's easy to knock the magazines, but they're having as hard a time as anybody else. But the content in them has changed, hasn't it, over the last 4 or 5 years particularly. They don't have the same kind of information they did. We've still got Trail doing the usual 18-month cycle of, you know, this is how you climb Snowdon, and you know, they seem to put the same rotor of stuff every 18 months. I say every 18 months or something on the Scottish Highlands as well. So we've still got that. But I think you're right. That detailed knowledge, I think, is getting more difficult. So that's what I want to concentrate on the next year. You know, I just want to concentrate on, A, helping people understand how you do things, but B, more importantly maybe, you know, getting the maximum pleasure and appreciation out of it, you know, enjoying the environment, understanding what you're seeing. You know, there is nothing quite like, still, waking up in a beautiful Scottish glen in the middle of nowhere in your tent and opening your tent flap in the morning and just looking out at the deer grazing in the background. You know, it's those kind of things, that kind of experiential stuff, I think is fabulous.
You're listening to the award-winning outdoorstation.co.uk. Podcasts to inform, inspire and entertain outdoors people all around the world.
To agree with you on your comment relating to the blog post regarding the simple things, the podcasts that have been the most popular have been the ones about popping out for a wild camp and bivvying for the first time and doing the basics like that. And certainly this year, I mean, my resolutions similar to yours, really. I've got to shed a bit of weight. It's hard to be pushing the lighter philosophy when you actually carry most of it on your stomach. So that'll be good to see that gone. And as you say, recording and celebrating the moment, as opposed to recording it and using it, trying to get, you know, be too commercially publicist about it almost. It's very hard. It's a very fine line, because on the one hand, you and I have been equally guilty of promoting it and leading people into this type of recording of your activity, whether it's video or blogging or whatever it may be. And now we're actually probably turning the corner and going, I think we just need to just make sure we remember to enjoy it.
I think we've also got to get a better handle on YouTube. You know, YouTube is a wonderful thing, isn't it? I mean, anything you want to do in life now, there's a video that shows you how to do it. What they don't do is give you the experience over time. We were watching some bushcraft videos last night, weren't we, of some people putting up a tent and testing stuff. What they're not talking about is what it's like to use that tent for 5 days in the middle of a storm or whatever. And I think that's why those TGO podcasts that we did, you know, all those years ago, are so perennially popular, because you're able to listen and go with people as they go through the dreadful weather, the lovely weather, you know, how on earth do you cross that river when it's in spades? So I think that kind of prolonged experience of stuff like that is particularly helpful. Now, of course, it's always nice on YouTube, you have to see what that pack looks like or that tent looks like, but it's only a part of the story, because, as you know very well, you know, putting your tent up is one thing, putting it up in a storm, rushing in when the weather's horrible, is a very different one. So, you know, I'm looking forward this year to the TGO Challenge. We're both doing our 10th.
Mm.
And we're both going to be podcasting as we go again. So if you see either of us going across Scotland, you can either jump in and join us or hide pretty quickly. But, you know, let's do that again, because it's that, people being able to move through those 2 weeks and understanding the change and the difference in mood, and, you know, great days of exhilaration and days of real depression. You know, people can move through that with you, and I think that really is experiential. I think that's very helpful.
It's a different type of story and entertainment, certainly, and I'd like to make it a couple of things, really. It'll probably be the last one we do on the TGO, because it's, you know, 10 years for both of us now, and we've done most of the variations
and
we can.
We're getting old and creaky.
Well, it's you know, we are just walking from west to east coast. But I'd like to make it more conversational with a lot more people and get it sharing those sort of experiences. But the added benefit or the added interest for me this year is, if we're lucky enough, and I think we're trying to sort that out, is we hope to do the Isle of Skye the week before. So Rose and I go up and do 100 miles on the Isle of Skye, and then she'll drop me off wherever I decide to start on the TGO, and I'll be doing TGO. So that's, what, 300 miles. But I think, because I'm starting, if you like, a week into it, I'm already hill fit and hopefully hill fit and settled in my stride. It'd be interesting to see the difference it has on me to the enjoyment of the event itself.
I think it will, because what's very clear about the TGO Challenge, although it is a big challenge, you know, anybody thinking of doing it for the first time, everything about it is a challenge, in a nice way. But 2 weeks is just the wrong time period, isn't it? I mean, at the end of those 2 weeks, you're just walking fit, you know, and you want to keep walking. Everybody says that. So I've met a number of people over the years who've done a week's walking before they've joined the TGO. Of course, Alan Sloman famously walked from Land's End to John O'Groats and ended the challenge in the middle. And to be fair, those people seem to have a greater experience. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see how you get on with that. And I shall be fascinated to meet you along the way in, I don't know, Fort Augustus or Aviemore or somewhere, and compare the state of my creaking knees to yours.
Pass you the oil, liniment. So, that's one of our big trips this year, obviously, as we're both sort of geeing ourselves up here to say, right, we are going to do more little mini multi-day trips, 2 or 3 days away, and probably keep it fairly simple. There were certainly various articles before Christmas appearing in the various press about people using their camping equipment, not only during the summer, but in winter as well. And some of the campsites, more established campsites, are actually starting to become more of a spa than, so they're changing their facilities. So it's actually more like a luxury spa. So you take your camping system, whether it's a camper van or a caravan or a tent, and you'd have this spa facility. So you're getting more use out of your camping gear, which is great. But again, like you were saying right at the very beginning, it is coming back to cost. So we've got to try and temper this enthusiasm for the outdoors with fitting it to your budget.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting watching the changes in campsites. There's a really nice little campsite in the Shropshire Hills that I walk past quite often, and you know, I've stayed there a few times, And over the years, it's moved from tents to motorhomes and caravans, as a lot of them are. And as a result of that, it's now used, you know, for much more of the year. You know, you walk past in the beginning of November and there were suddenly people in the field where they weren't before. So I think the idea of the bigger campsites and, you know, some of the show sites, the caravan sites in Britain, particularly in Scotland, are superb, aren't they? So I can see the point in doing that because I do like camping in the winter, but of course you do have those long nights to deal with and, you know, you just get a bit fed up in the same pub every night. But, yeah, I think it is interesting. So TGO Challenge, the other thing I missed out last year was I like doing, you know, a 4 or 5 day jaunt to the Cairngorms or somewhere where I can just go up on the train, get off, start walking, 3 or 4 days in the hills. I haven't done that this year, so hopefully I'll get back to doing that this year. But again, the cost consciousness of it is there all the time, isn't it? Because, you know, those B&Bs that you like to stay in every 4 or 5 days, you know, maybe we'll stretch that out to 6 or 7. And it will be interesting to talk to those people in the industry as we go across Scotland this year to see how it's impacting on them.
The few people that I've spoken to that have got bed and breakfasts or little villages, shall we say, where there's been a community and there's been facilities, I think that's going to be the biggest shock as reflecting on the 10 years, which I'm going to be doing as a walk, thinking, well, that was open, it's now closed, and that's closed, and that's closed. I know various pubs and hotels that have been mentioned in the podcast have closed. Yeah. And so I was reading the forum the other day, and people were actually starting to quite obviously be concerned about where they could send their parcels to when they send them 3 or 4 days ahead and where they can access them. So everything's changed. Everywhere's changing. It's all a result, as you say, of Brexit and the pound dropping and the effect. But let's sort of move away from the financial side because it does seem to keep reoccurring in the conversation and come on to something else.
For a complete listing of our audio and video library, please visit our website, theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
One of the pleasures that we all have when we're outdoors is obviously the view, the weather possibly, and the food. I think the one thing that I like to do, and I'm very guilty of not doing it as much as I'd like to, and that is stopping early enough to enjoy the pitching of the tent and stretch out, get everything all sorted and dried, and then enjoy the food. And one of the things I'm thinking of touching on this year in a series of podcasts, apart from more wild camps and obviously recording our experiences, is seeing if anybody wants to get together, meet up somewhere, perhaps for a wild camp or even a campsite, it's not that important, and try different types of food styles. This goes back to when I first started doing the podcast 12 years ago. I did meet someone who had a Thai wife, and he said, right, we must get together because we always eat Thai food when we're camping. And it's actually, sensibly, it's very light, it's fresh, it's easy to cook on one single burner. And I was thinking, well, actually, it'd be quite good fun and social to meet up with somebody and try different people's style of food. So perhaps we would do some dehydrated meals to actually talk about how they go together on the podcast, perhaps do a video about those and let other people experience that and then see if we can reciprocate and find people around the UK that we could perhaps spend a couple of evenings and enjoy the menu. What do you think?
Oh, I think there's a lot in that. I mean, before we got onto the food itself, your point about on a long trek, stopping early enough to be able to unwind and enjoy your food, I think is an important one, you know. And if you do a long, you know, do a 2-week walk or more like the challenge, you know, you'll find some days where, because of weather or something, you have to push on and walk longer than you'd want. But I increasingly try and make sure I stop now because it is part of the experience. And coming back to that experience, there are lots of different ways you can do it. So I still think the best piece of outdoor gear I've ever bought was my food dehydrator. You know, convinced about that. Buy a long chalk. You know, because the quality of stuff you can make yourself is just so much better than the commercial stuff. And I know the commercial stuff has improved. And this year I tried out some vegan meals, which were pretty good.
Is this pre-packed meals?
Yeah, pre-packed meals. They were very good, actually. I think you're right. And I'm conscious that in Scotland, I'll dehydrate meals like, a lamb casserole or a curry or bolognese sauce or something like that, because you just want something, you just want to hit something very quickly when you stop. But if we're in France or Spain, we don't do that at all. You know, we go to, in the summer, we'll go to supermarkets, we'll buy some cheese, maybe a bit of pasta, an onion, some tomatoes, some ham. It'll keep in your pack for days on end. You know, and we're cooking fresh stuff there and then. And it is a different experience. And it's one that makes the most of it. So I think that'd be quite interesting to see how big different people use the dehydrating technique, how different people cook fresh food. I mean, our rather eccentric mate Humphrey, who does the challenge with us, he does carry dehydrating food. He doesn't like it. Every time he goes into a village where there's a butcher's, you know, he ends up buying steak, and you see him in the middle of nowhere with his frying pan making a steak sandwich, you know, and which seems a bit eccentric, but he loves it. It's part of his experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the trip to France we did last year, exactly that. We took just a simple camping setup. It was only one burner, and we were cooking on one burner. So it's almost a one pot or one burner cooking experience. And again, reflecting on popular podcasts, that one I keep coming back to, of Christmas from 2011 it was now, in Wales, and I did that three-course Christmas meal.
Yes, you did. I still remember that, with the gale blowing the sides in of the tent in, yes.
Yeah, but it's been extremely popular, apart from the fun aspect. It was actually successful, wasn't it? It was a good meal. I mean, it was a great meal. And you didn't do the washing up. So I think if people want to get involved and share some ideas and actually want to join in on a podcast, then drop me a line on the email or via Facebook or whatever it may be, and see if we can organise something during the year.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how different people develop different strategies for doing the same things. Yeah, that would be really interesting.
Well, it's a sort of a combination between backpacking and, bushcraft or outdoor activity, isn't it? In the sense that if somebody's lucky enough to live, by the sea, and you can pull out your mussels, buy an onion and some garlic, and away you go. You've got yourself Monnier.
I do remember some years ago sitting with you on the side of a small harbour in Pembrokeshire with you trying to catch fish. Up the side of it, you know, me with the
humour and the jokes,
bush buddy wood stove waiting for the fish, which of course didn't arrive. But you know, that's all part of the experience isn't it? And of course, this thing about experience, I'm really struck by it when I speak to people on the challenge, like William from Barbados, lovely, lovely man. And you know, Barbados is a pretty small place, and he's become quite famous in Barbados, because he trains by walking around it with his backpack on in rather high temperatures. Yeah. But, you know, he can't worry too much about gear, because he flies into Britain, goes straight to London or Manchester or Glasgow, and he has to, you know, he has to have what they have in the shop. And it's a reminder that it's, you know, you mustn't be too obsessive about it. But he's coming back again next year, which will be great. And he's coming back next year because of the experience of Scotland and the hills.
Yeah. I shall look forward to catching up with him. Well, Andy, I wish you well for 2018. And I wish all our listeners exactly the same. I hope we all have a happy, healthy and safe year. And let's get out more, enjoy the hills more, and just relax and share the experience, I think.
Yeah, I would say get out more. But if you can't get out more, put a bit more time into planning what you're doing. You know, make sure you've really maximise the time, or you do something a bit differently. But just make sure you make the most of what is still a fantastic, great experience, and ultimately still a very cheap and accessible one, should you plan it properly.
Drop us a line with your feedback, suggestions or comments directly to info@theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.